This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
I'm Matthew Bannister. Welcome to a special 5 Live podcast. Earlier, I was joined on the phone in by Britain's most high-profile football referee, Graham Pohl. For an hour, listeners put their calls to him live on air. Graham Pohl, who's just retired from being a referee, I think 3 years early, Graham, is that right? Is it 3 years ahead of the time that you would have had to go?
Well, good morning, Matthew. It's impossible to put an actual time limit on it because the EU have ruled that it's illegal to legislate or discriminate on age grounds. But certainly from an international point of view, I could have refereed the whole of 2008. So it's 18 months early internationally and who knows how many years domestically.
Why did you go early?
It's a good question. It's one that I've considered. Clearly the World Cup incident, which was highlighted and I thought very well on Inside Sport last night, affected me quite badly.
Did it knock your confidence?
Oh, massively. It's a situation where you put yourself in any job, in any walk of life, and if you fail to get a contract, if you're a sales guy, if you fail to close the deal, who knows about it? Maybe your boss, certainly the client, and maybe your wife if you tell her when you get home. But to make what's one of the biggest mistakes and most catastrophic mistakes in front of about 4 billion people has to knock anyone's confidence.
I should read you this email because it might cheer you up a bit. It's from Barry Calderbank, who says, as an Australian, I hope Graham Pohl doesn't dwell too much on not sending that Croatian off for his third yellow at the World Cup. That stuff aside, it was a great match and his refereeing made a huge contribution to that. He let the game flow and allowed the players to dazzle. It was among the truly great highlights in Aussie and probably Croatian football history. Graham, thanks for your part in that. That make you feel better?
Well, it's nice. It's comforting that some people saw it for what it was. I mean, what we have to bear in mind and keep in perspective is it was a mistake over a 94-minute performance. And the problem we have these days in refereeing and in football is referees only get highlighted for their mistakes, for their errors, rather than the high percentage. It's something like a 96% success rate in decision-making.
Mm. So how did it come about? Can you just talk us through it?
Well, I mean, as I highlighted last night, I think, I don't know. We can only assume that it was down. You know, I discussed it with the assistants and the fourth official and basically anyone that would phone me. And the only conclusion that I could come to is fatigue. Looking at the video and listening to my mum talk, she said, it didn't look like my normal performance. I did look drained. I did look very, very tired. And it's stress. And it was a very, very difficult game of football to referee. There were so many incidents in it. And the majority I got right. But one of the big ones I got wrong. I mean, just to correct that man, nice of him to write in, but it wasn't that I failed to send him off at his third yellow card. I got that one. It was the second yellow
second
card
one,
I failed
yes,
to send him off.
So. Of course. But the other thing that's obviously been very high profile over the last week has been your criticism of the FA. Did you start to get disillusioned with the support or lack of support that you were getting from the football authorities in these high profile incidents?
It's something which is topical. I have the opportunity, having decided to stop refereeing at the top level, I have the opportunity to raise an issue on retirement. It was my choice as to which issue I raised. Because of the profile that I have, I could have done any number of topics, and I chose the one that's closest to my heart because it affects all referees at all levels. And the number of letters I've had and emails and texts I've had from Parks referees, from mid-range referees, level 4, level 3, all the way up, saying thank you for saying something because we can't. And
we had quite a lot of people on this phone in last week, when your comments first came out, referees at different levels of the games saying that they sympathised with what you had to say.
It's one of those very, very difficult, almost impossible situations where you can slope off and say nothing, and if you do say something, you can be accused of, once again, Graham Pohl likes the line light. There's that issue. It's not that case. I have the position to actually highlight this as an issue. And what I wanted to do, which I think I've done successfully, is raise this as a debating point, which hopefully for the start of next season, it can actually cause create some change.
Okay, 0500 909 693 is the number to call if you would like to ask a question of Graham. And lots of people are doing that. Let's go straight to the phones and take the first call from Gary in Liverpool. Morning, Gary.
Morning.
You're through to Graham.
Yeah, morning, Graham.
Morning, Gary.
I've got two questions for you.
Yep.
And first off, thank God I can hear the sound of your voice, because I've never done that before. and that's really where I'm leading up to. I watch Everton, you know, week in, week out, seeing the Goodison Park many times.
Yep.
But this is really the first time I've ever heard what you sound like, you know, since you've retired.
Right.
What's the score with regards to, you know, decisions being explained? You know, you, along with Dermot Gallagher, have just retired. And Dermot is one of these guys who just gets on with the game. He's very emotionless, doesn't wave his arms around and say what he's done. And we as fans really struggle and want to, you know, why you've made the decision. Then after the match, why can't you or why don't you give an interview?
So you think, Gary, that refs like Graham should go on the TV just like the managers and the players do after each match to explain their decisions?
Yeah, because, like, at the end of the day, you know, we're all paying fans, and you're the, you know, as I say, you're the guy in the middle, and you do affect the game, and we just think, just as like as, you know, the managers can come out and say their bit and slag it off, you know, you should be able to defend yourself. And most importantly, from a supporter's point of view, why don't you?
I think that's a very valid point. We are actually entitled and allowed to come out after a game and comment on our decisions during that 90-minute match. We're not allowed to comment on other referees or other situations. I think it would probably descend into a bit of farce if we started getting involved with managers' comments. One of the reasons that referees are reluctant to go on and talk about decisions is we're never asked how on earth you got that decision right. It's always, what about that one you got wrong? And when you look at the high level, as I said, of detection rate of good decisions, it's always disappointing that the one question they ask is, what about that incident?
There's always going to be controversial issues, aren't there, Graham? But what seems to happen at the moment is that it can sometimes be open season on the referee, you know, that managers and players can come out, and for some days or even weeks after a match, they can be going into the newspapers, appearing on 5 Live, appearing on the television, questioning the referee's decision. But the referee, you know, keeps stum and doesn't stand up and defend himself.
Once that happens, once those comments are made, which become quite often personal, we are then forbidden to actually make those comments, because it could be a case that the FA are taking, and that could then prejudice the case. So we are allowed to comment immediately after the match, but as I say, the only question you ever get asked is, what about that decision, you got it wrong? And quite often you'll be shown a video of a situation which maybe backs up your decision, and then sometimes it's a different video which is shown to your comment, which is a little bit duplicitous and upsetting. I have been on a number of times. Once a very famous Everton-Liverpool game, as I'm sure Gary will remember, when I made a right ricket in the last minute and disallowed what was probably a perfectly good goal, and tried to explain it away. And when I watched the video afterwards, I thought maybe I should have kept my mouth shut.
A lot of people have sent questions in about video evidence. And let's just pick this one at random on the email from Kevin Channing, who says, would Graham think it would be a good idea to show a live game on TV and not show any replays at all? At least that would show how hard it is to get every decision right and do it in a split second, unlike these so-called experts. A few days later, you could show the game with all the replays and see how many people got the decisions correct. What do you think about that idea?
I think it's an interesting idea. I don't think it's one that's practical, in that we've now become accustomed to seeing the game and seeing the replays. You know, when you actually go to a stadium, you're almost, when you don't quite see something properly, you're looking at the screen hoping that they will show that on replay, so you, in case you've missed it. We have to live in the real world. It is a very difficult job. It's something which I think, you know, what I'm trying to do is highlight just how difficult that job is and how possibly we could be helped a little bit more, not just from the FA, but we should look at the root cause as to why people make the job as difficult as they do.
And should you stand up, you know, you said that you could comment on specific decisions after a match, should you stand up and put your hands up if you think you have got it wrong immediately? I mean, would it be helpful in terms of the kind of anger that gets built up if you, as you said in the Liverpool-Everton game, you know, if you have disallowed a goal that should have been a goal, should you stand up and say, I'm really sorry, in the heat of the moment, I got it wrong?
I think in the ideal world, yes. I think Paul Durkins, when he was refereeing, came on a couple of times and said, you know, I've clearly got that one wrong, and that's that. I'm sorry about that. It's a tricky one, in that if you go out first day of the season and go on TV, oh, I'm sorry, I clearly got that one wrong, and then match day two, you go on and go, by the way, I've got that one wrong as well. You know, it's a credibility issue, and I think that's difficult. And it's the question I would ask you is, how many times has a manager asked, that substitution looked wrong, you know, you conceded a goal straight afterwards, was that a good decision? Or that centre forward, why did you decide to try and head it when a volley would have gone in? You know, and it's only the referee who is examined closely for every mistake.
OK, let's bring in Stephen, who's been waiting very patiently to speak to us from Chester. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning.
You're through to Graham.
Good morning, Stephen.
What I wanted to ask you, I mean, you were a member of the referees committee and what have you. Did you ever discuss trying to adopt the same sort of principle in rugby, i.e. Zero tolerance of dissent?
Certainly with regard to dissent, we tried to adopt the rugby regulation whereby we move the ball forward 9.15 metres or 10 yards.
Yeah.
The issue with that was we still had to issue a caution first, a yellow card first, and then move the ball forward. And what we found was it was no deterrent. Players didn't mind conceding that distance because the distance in football is not as vital as it is in rugby. So that law didn't actually transmit quite as well.
And we had a statement actually from the FA this time last week when we were talking about these decisions, saying that they'd been quite keen to bring in the 10-yard rule, but FIFA had been against it.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, can I interrupt that? I mean, but but the yellow card itself, though, is a deterrent, isn't it? You know, because I mean, players are questioning decisions all the time.
And you think, Stephen, that referees tolerate too much dissent, do you?
Well, not only are they questioning decisions, they're swearing blatantly. I mean, there was a couple of years ago, I remember United were playing Arsenal, and Graham will remember this very well, and Wayne Rooney, he was effing and blinding at Graham, and I thought, he's going to go, he's definitely going to go. And Graham, I couldn't believe how sort of tolerant he was with him, really, you know?
I think what we have to do, Stephen, I do remember that game rather well. You're quite right. It's one that's indelibly marked on my mind. What you have to bear in mind is that the use of foul language is no longer outlawed within the laws of the game, and that's something which people don't realise. The words have to be either offensive, insulting, or abusive. If a player uses the F word repeatedly as part of his vocabulary, is he trying to abuse the referee? That's the point you can debate. But what you have to bear in mind is the use of foul language alone is not an offence.
Wouldn't it be clearer, though, if it was? Because I'm sure in rugby, it's an absolutely clear-cut distinction. Wouldn't it be easier for you as the ref the minute the F-word came out, you were able to issue a caution?
I'd be very interested to see the reaction to zero tolerance. I mean, it would make a referee's life, as you say, very much easier with a black and white situation of if a player uses a foul word, he will be sent from the field of play. I do wonder what the reaction of fans and the media would be to that situation.
OK, well, let us know. 0500 909 693 is the free phone number to call. Bannister@bbc.co.uk on the email. It's just coming up to 9:20. This is Matthew Bannister with you on 5 Live. And Graham Pole is here in the studio taking your calls. Queues and queues of people waiting to speak to you, Graham. Let's start with Paul in Croydon. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Matthew.
You're through to Graham.
Good morning to you, Graham.
Morning, Paul.
Good morning. I'd just like to ask you, having recently qualified myself and being aware that a good number of people are ignorant of the laws of the game, how do you feel about some of these football pundits that sit in armchairs, look at decisions from 5 different angles, and then spend 20 minutes berating the referee?
It's certainly a source of frustration. And first of all, can I wish you well on your new career?
Thank you.
Out there refereeing.
Thank you very much.
Make sure you got your tin hat with you. it's something which I'll be joining you next season, I think, on the local parks. Whilst I've retired from the top level, I may well
Wonderful.
Be refereeing local park stuff. I'm not just running away. It's as I say, it's a source of frustration that the players, the managers, and indeed the pundits don't know all of the laws of the game. But football is such a simple game, and transmits all the levels at the same way that they don't really need to know the laws of the game. That's the view. What you'd like to do is get someone that does know the laws actually analysing decisions and coming out with, if you make a mistake, why you made the mistake. And some kind of feedback as to how you could avoid making that mistake in the future.
Do you have advice for Paul as he starts out on his career, Graham? Apart from putting his tin hat on, what would you say to him are the principles that have governed your refereeing career and that might stand him in good stead as he sets off?
I think the first thing, Paul, is fitness is key. If you're up with play, you can actually sell a decision quite well. Even if you make a mistake, if you're right on the spot, the players will tend to accept your decisions better. And I think always be prepared to listen to a player, and you can give clarification but not justification. And that's a clear differential between what we have to do on the field of play. So it's a fantastic thing to do. It's highly enjoyable. And if at the end of a game you get two or three players from each side shaking hands, that's all you need from a game of football.
How does clarification differ from justification?
If a player doesn't understand why you've given a free kick, you clarify it for him. It's not, I know why you've given it, and I don't think you're right. There's a clear difference. One is a lack of understanding, and one is a lack of acceptance.
OK, I understand. OK, Paul, thanks for that from Croydon. Let's talk to Graham from Bedford, who's been holding on. Morning, Graham.
Good morning, Matthew. Morning, Graham. It's Graham Leach. How are you?
Morning, Graham. Very well, thank you.
Do you know each other?
Yes, we do.
We did a game at Maidstone once. Remember that, Graham?
We did indeed, yeah. I actually closed the ground down at Maidstone. But,
that's right. We were the last ones on it.
That's right.
Graham, the question I've got for you. At the moment, the FA are pulling up the drawbridge on some of your comments and Inside Sport last night. If they're going to support referees, don't you think at the highest level the way to hit clubs is to take points off them for lack of discipline?
It clearly is. What you don't want to do is be draconian with people, but certainly there's a line which should be drawn, which people shouldn't cross, and that line is being ignored repeatedly by serial offenders, and it's disappointing, as you say. I mean, I think the drawbridge is drawn up. I understand that. I wasn't expecting any different.
Yeah.
But hopefully, behind those drawbridges, discussions are taking place, which hopefully will bring some differences for the start of next season.
Can you give me an example, Graham, of where you think points should have been docked for bad behaviour?
I think to look retrospectively is not necessarily the right thing to do. I think what you need to do is draw up a list of criteria of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable behaviour.
Let's look forward then. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to discuss the John Terry incident in a moment, but before we do that, let's look forward and give me the shape of a kind of incident that you can see where a side should lose points.
It's a situation where, as I say, it's not a one-off situation. It's a question of, I think, a personal attack on a man who is out there refereeing a game of football is wholly wrong, and that needs punishment in the first place of however it's seen. And if it's repeated, then we should be looking at a potential points deduction.
Right.
It's not a question of, I think he got that decision wrong. That's his opinion, and that's up to him. But certainly comments about a referee being biased, not having integrity, they're the core values that a referee must have, and that's why the situation is so important that the FA do step up to the mark and say, no, enough is enough, let's draw the line now, and say comments about of a personal nature or question a referee's integrity will result ultimately in points deduction.
Yeah, and because presumably what you think is that the punishments handed out by the FAA on some of these occasions in the past have been totally inadequate.
It would certainly appear so. I mean, not to pick on sort of not one of the worst offenders, but Arsene Wenger, I think three times this season has been reported for misconduct in and around the technical area and comments made to referees, and the last one of which he called an assistant referee a liar. I mean, that's a serious thing to say, and the fine was either £2,500 or £3,500. And you look at that and think, is that what an assistant referee who's worked very hard for that career to attain that level? This was on the line of the Carling Cup final. Is that what his integrity is worth?
Okay, now let's talk about the John Terry incident. Lots of emails about that. And let's just start with this simple question from Dave Sellers, who says, why did you send off John Terry against Tottenham last season?
I mean, I think it was clear for all to see. The first caution was indisputable, and no one's ever queried that. It was a clear foul on the halfway line. I think it was on Berbatov. And the second offence, for me, was an aggressive pull on Ledley King, pulled him to the ground. It wasn't just a barge; it was actually pulling him to the ground, and that's to be seen on video. And the point I've made, and some people have said, "Oh, you've said you were wrong," is if the whole incident post match had been a discussion on was I right or wrong to send him off, I have no issue with that. And if people afterwards say we think you were wrong, or certainly not wrong but harsh, it wasn't that there was no foul; it was it worthy of a second yellow card. I have no issue with people discussing or saying you've got that wrong, that decision. the situation with the Chelsea-Tottenham game, and it wasn't all about John Terry, and everyone's polarised it onto John Terry because he's England captain, I guess. I think it's wrong to do that. There were many, many incidents and many situations in the game and after the game, but the John Terry situation, that's why I sent him off. There have been all sorts of allegations flying around.
The allegation, Dan in Crawley says, do you think Terry really deserved to be sent off, or did you just have a grudge against Chelsea at the time, which was one of the allegations that were made, wasn't it?
I mean, again, as I stated earlier, the key point a referee must have is his integrity. And questions such as, do you have a grudge against this team or that team, is utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. And the problem is, because it's being raised by managers, by coaches, of do you not like us, are you against us, and you're always against us, that has been allowed to pervade into the game. 2-3 years ago, a referee's integrity in England was never in question, and now it's becoming so, and that's why I feel so strongly about not just this case but many other cases.
And so that presumably is why James Moore feels able to send us this question, which is, my father tells me that you were a guest at a party for the Islamic Bank of Britain and you revealed that you support Tottenham Hotspur. Is this true?
I don't recall being at that event, but...
Do you support Tottenham Hotspur?
I don't. I actually used to support, and it's a strange thing, I used to support Queen's Park Rangers as a kid, and that got exposed before the 2000 FA Cup final. But they don't have a great record with me refereeing them, so I guess that proves that you don't really favour.
Sadly, for those of us who follow their fortunes, they don't have a great record. Full stop at the moment.
That's fair. Yeah.
but so you're not a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, and that wasn't influencing your decisions in that match with Chelsea.
Let's make this absolutely clear. A referee before every season has to complete a registration form, and one question on that form is: do you have or have had an allegiance with any team? Do any family members, are they members of a club? Are they season ticket holders? And you're declaring what your allegiances are. And if you have allegiances, you don't referee that team. And that's very, very clear. You know, Mike Riley lives in Leeds and follows Leeds. He doesn't referee Leeds United. That to me is a very, very obvious thing, and yet people always look at it. I guess I could take it as a compliment that I've been accused of being a Tottenham fan, a Chelsea fan, a Man United fan, an Arsenal fan, etc., etc. The list goes on.
It's a bit like the BBC. If all the political parties are cross with you at the same time, you think you might be doing your job.
I guess you're hitting the right notes, yeah.
All right, Graeme, let's bring in Stuart from Eastbourne, who's called us on 0500 999 693. Morning, Stuart.
Morning. Hi, Graeme.
Pleasure. Morning, Stuart.
No problem. Different question for you. I'm a Wolves season ticket holder, so I see a lot of football. And I've noticed over the last 5 years, I'm not sure the players' behaviour towards referees has deteriorated a lot, but the managers have and the coaches have. There's a lot of ranting on the touchline, a lot of shouting at you, a lot more managers being sent out the dugout. And in the press, nearly not all managers, but most managers, whether you're Rochdale manager or Chelsea, after the referee done this, the referee's useless, the referee done this, it's his fault. Is that due to the high pressures in the game the managers are under financially from supporters and from the board, the results are everything, they're under so much pressure that if they don't win, the referee's an easy target? Or has referee standards dropped? I think the referees do a good job. My personal opinion is I just think the manager's on so much pressure that, you know...
OK, we get your point of view, Stuart. Let's see what Graham's is, shall we?
Stuart, it's great to hear your views, and I have to say I share most of them. We are now at a win-at-all-costs situation within football, and as you rightly say, the referee is a very easy target. I think refereeing standards have not declined. I think most people would accept that, and certainly the advent of professional refereeing has improved our fitness, which as I was saying to Paul in Croydon, fitness is key to any refereeing. So I have to say, I think you're absolutely spot on with your view that managers' comments are not helpful. And one thing would be to not announce the name of the referee before the game, so they can't try and pre-influence you.
They try and soften you up, do they?
Yeah.
Right. And I think you said on Inside Sport last night that Jose Mourinho had made a disgraceful remark to you during a match last month.
I did.
Can you just explain that incident for those who didn't see the programme?
For those that didn't see the programme, I was just commenting after the or during the Chelsea Man United game. There was a comment which Mourinho made, which as I said was too disgusting for me to repeat, certainly not on such a good show as this.
And do you have any understanding of how a manager might end up in that situation? Do you think that they lose it and that they, you know, they're over emotional, or do you think they do it in a calculated way?
I understand frustration. I understand the pressures that are placed to bear on those individuals, but we have that similar pressure placed upon us, and I don't make those kind of outbursts at anyone on the field of play. You have to show respect. You know, I ask to be respected, and therefore I show respect, and hopefully it comes back to you. To hear such comments, you have to say, when something's repeated by a manager and at least three or four players, maybe that is calculated.
OK, let's bring in some of these callers who've been waiting to speak to you. Let's bring in Roland from Luton, first of all. Good morning, Roland.
Good morning.
You're on.
Good morning, Roland.
Yeah, I'm just looking through my book. I think we might have been together on your first game on the conference in 1988.
Is that Roland Dodge?
Yes.
Not bad, eh? What a memory.
What a memory. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
No, I looked in my book. It was in there. We did a few other ones. Graham, a couple of things is with the... When you, a manager is reported or a player is reported, they get sort of 28 days to reply to the charge. Surely that loses some of its impetus and it doesn't stand as a deterrent to other people. The other one is, since about the beginning of the 60s, where players are surrounding referees, really questioned referees' decisions and circumvented the laws of the game since then, that the referees have given them an inch and they have taken a yard. Now, to bring it back, as you've quite said, the football associations need to back the referees. But there are some referees, I believe, that will allow, so they can proceed in, or go up the ladder in their footballing careers, say, yeah, I'm going to let them get away with that because I want to go forward.
Okay, Roland, you've raised two points, I think. The first one is the length of time it takes for charges against a manager or a player to come to a hearing, and the second one is this question of whether some referees let bad behaviour go on because it furthers their career. Let's deal with the first one first, about the length of time.
Well, certainly, I'm a great believer that what we should do is start applying some of the laws of the game to managers' conduct. And if there's an incident that a manager comes out with, which, in my view, a player would be cautioned for, why not caution him? It's his warning as to any more, and he'll be off. And therefore, the same disciplinary procedures could apply. That would certainly speed the process up and take away this, as you say, this interminable wait. You know, when you actually dismiss a manager, Vassas has got me at it now, when you dismiss a manager in November and the case is heard in May, that does seem a little bit ridiculous. Mm. There's also the question you raised about mass dissent of players crowding you. It used to be that if three or more players surrounded a referee, irrespective of what they say or how the referee handles that, that would be a charge, and that was brought in by Adam Crozier following the Andy Durso-Roy Keane affair. That seems to have been watered down now, and I believe we should bring that back in so that it's a matter of fact. It doesn't need reporting by the referee. It's there for all to see. There are three or more players from one side putting pressure on the referee, which will not help his decision-making process.
And that's not you'd rather that wasn't a matter of judgment for the referee. It was just a matter of saying it's an absolute rule. If three or more players from one side are putting pressure on the referee, that is a charge.
We are, yeah, absolutely. We're trained not to show that we are intimidated or get agitated by that pressure. And therefore, it needs to be a matter of fact that the observer in the stand can see it and go, there are three players or more. Usually more, that will result in a charge. Mm. And players need to see that. And what would, you know, you could push that further. Once you get to that point, you could push it further and say it's the captain who is permitted to make that that question, that call for clarification on a decision. That would certainly ease the situation.
Which is like the rugby situation.
Yes.
Would you like to see that happen, where only the captain can raise points with the referee, just as it is in rugby union?
I think that would be sensible. I think the issue you would have with it certainly is who is the captain, and is he one of the worst culprits at actually getting in your face and moaning at you?
Have you ever been physically frightened? Because it was interesting last week when we were talking about refereeing, we did have a couple of people ring up and say they'd actually been assaulted by players who disagreed with decisions they'd taken at the lower levels of the league.
It's something that certainly is well known to referees at all levels. I mean, I raised the point, I'm very, very fortunate, or I have been very fortunate, that I've got police, I've got stewarding, I've got all sorts of protection there, which the guys at the local parks don't have. And this is the point I'm trying to make towards the Football Association, is that behaviour cascades down football. It starts at the top level and comes down. You know, I go and watch my seven-year-old son and we see boys diving. So it's proof that that's what happens. They never used to. So what's needed is a referee should be protected. And if he's protected at the very top level, that will then cascade down to the bottom level. We're seeing far too many assaults on referees at the local park, and I have nothing but admiration for the guys that still go out, step over the white line and brave that situation. It's not happening every week, it's not happening every match, and let's not overstate it, but once a season is once too often.
And has anyone ever threatened you physically?
No. Not within, on the field of play.
Okay. Now, this is from somebody who is a retired referee. Okay. His name is Ed on the email. He says, "Hi, Graham. As a retired referee and currently chairman of a local referees association, well done for speaking out," says Ed. "My question is, do you feel that there is time for a change with regards to the governing body for referees? I ask this question as I believe the FA are in a position of conflict with the big money they receive from football clubs to fund their activities. Does this not put the referee in a position of weakness towards the club and in the Premier League in particular?" That's the question that Ed is putting to you.
I think it's a very valid point, and as I say, it's a win-at-all-cost mentality. It's a multi-million pound business that we're involved in, and it certainly begs the question, are we compromised in our decision-making? You certainly know if you upset one of the big clubs, it isn't coincidental. You may not referee them for a little while. And so you would ask the question to the referee, do you consider your decision-making with that in mind?
Some commentators suggested that in the John Terry situation there was an alleged conflict in the FA because it was the captain of England that was being dealt with there, and of course they're responsible for England. There was a suggestion among some people that left the FA in a conflicted situation when it came to backing you up or not backing you up under those circumstances.
I mean, what a referee has to do when he goes out there is it doesn't matter whether it's the England captain, the Scottish captain or the Estonian captain, you have to treat them equally and fairly. Mm.
But in terms of the governing body, which is the point that Ed's raising, really, you know, is the governing body facing a conflict of interest?
I think what you'd need to do is ask Brian Barwick that question. Is he facing a conflict of interest? Is he affected by the multi-million pounds that are coming in the game and that influence? What I can say is referees aren't, in my opinion, and mustn't be influenced by that type of situation.
Okay, let's bring in Martin from Manchester, who I think may have a criticism of your performance on the pitch. Martin, good morning.
Morning, Matthew. Morning, Graham.
Good morning, Martin.
Season ticket holder at Bolton, Graham. And to be honest, quite happy to see your name down as referee if we're playing Fulham or Middlesbrough or another equal ranking club. Quite happy if I see you on telly refereeing the Big Four playing each other.
Uh-huh.
A lot of us have not been as happy to see you if it's Bolton against Arsenal, Man U, whatever, and feel that sometimes you treat players from the top four clubs. Roy Keane would be Roy, Ivan Campo would be Bolton's number eight. It's just a perception that we've picked up in the crowd. I mean, is it a fair perception? We just feel that sometimes there's a different level of treatment to different players, and if you're refereeing a game where you perceive the players to be of equal status, it's fine.
I think it's a fair question. It's something that people often raise with me, and certainly with Bolton. You can look, and I can tell you what, I could have tried as hard as I wanted to on January the 1st, but the way you played at Anfield, it was always going to be 3-0.
No complaints about your performance.
Martin, if you look at a situation within that game, if you can remember it, it would have been very easy for me to send off your centre-half at receiving a caution. He whacks the ball away about 30 yards, showing clear dissent.
It's strange you bring that incident up because, you know, there was a few of us looked at each other in a state of surprise and said, oh my God, I can't believe he's done that, and sort of heard your explanation of it or somebody on your behalf saying that you treated it as one incident, which, you know, was a good common sense piece of refereeing from our point of view. Hmm.
Good. Well, as I say, Martin, if I wanted to go in favour of the big team, as you say...
Don't get me wrong, I don't see it as you deliberately biased against, as sometimes slightly more favourable in application of the rules to others, and I know that doesn't necessarily sound like a big difference.
No, I understand the point, and we work with a sports psychologist, and he talks about the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, and how we have control over the conscious mind, but not the subconscious, and that may get a bit deep felt for you, but...
No, good going.
It's a situation, as long as I don't consciously make decisions against any individual player or club, then... That's all I can control.
Could you subconsciously be seduced by the glamour of Manchester United or Arsenal or Chelsea?
It's an interesting... I mean, there are university courses which claim that they've proved that a crowd can influence a referee's decision-making. You know, it's a fact that I think after a sending off, four out of the next five decisions go to the team that are reduced to to 10 men. Now, that isn't something that I was aware of, but they say...
And you wouldn't do it consciously, but it just sort of happens.
It would seem to be, because I've sent a player off, I need to prove that I'm not against you and I'm giving you lots of decisions. Hmm. That isn't something which is a conscious thing, and I've never checked that to see if that's true. It's something I've read from a university paper.
Hmm. So you might be accepting that you could subconsciously be biased, although you're never consciously aware of it.
I would say that... In my opinion, I review every match I referee, and I can honestly say I've never felt that I was biased one way or the other. And certainly, when you look at my record over the 14 years I've been on the Premier League, it's interesting to note that I've done a chart to show that the second most successful team for me to referee is Wimbledon Football Club, which I don't think are a very big, glamorous club.
All right. We'll take some more calls. And Anthony is on the line from Lincoln. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Matthew. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Anthony.
Regarding the issue of being wired up on the football field,
yep,
the referee, and then also having a fourth official on the sideline, I wondered if Graham had any comments to make as regarding an independent assessment after a major decision.
You mean
a
video playback after each major decision, Anthony?
Something like a rugby league scenario.
All right, Graham, what do you think of that?
I think it's something which referees would love to get every decision right, and when they make a clear and obvious error, it's something which troubles us. You know, we drive home, it bothers us, we don't sleep too well. But what you have to bear in mind is, if you open Pandora's box, you know, the eels of the world are out there, and if you start to analyse one decision, then what's the next one? We have a game of football which is great because of the ebb and flow of football. And if you stop and analyse a contentious decision, as you say, or a controversial decision, who's to judge when it's contentious, controversial or disputable? That's the difficulty. I think if there's a clear and obvious error, it would be wonderful to change that. Under your own volition, not under pressure from players or managers, but you make a decision and stand there and think, damn, I've got that wrong. I'd like to change that, but I don't want to do it because of the influence of the players. I want to go over, check the video and say, that's wrong. Once you do that, though, what about the next decision, the next decision, the next decision? And I think it's something that people need to consider, the whole game, not just one incident.
The game could be stopping every 3 or 4 minutes, couldn't it?
Hopefully not that often. We don't make that many mistakes.
If people, then, you know, players and managers would start to challenge decisions, wouldn't they? And they'd be wanting you to and check the video. And
I mean, if you look at the documentary last night, we talked about a high profile incident, one of many last season, in the Charlton Fulham game, where we gave a free kick wrongly gave a free kick in the last minute on the touchline. Okay. That wasn't contentious when it was given. The fact that it was knocked into the penalty area and then bobbled about and was put in the net makes it contentious. So what is a contentious decision and what isn't? If that ball had gone out of play for a goal kick, then no one cares about the fact you got a free kick wrong.
Mm. Okay, let's bring in Peter from Manchester, who I think has a more personal take on things. Peter, over to you.
Good morning, chaps. Morning, Graham.
Morning, Peter.
Pleasure to speak to you. It was just at the very end of the documentary. It was a point you made. You were stood outside the newsagent. You had a newspaper in your hand. And you said, this won't be happening next season. And you made a comment along the lines of, and my family won't have to see this.
Yep.
Has that influenced your decision to retire early? Because I thought you were an outstanding referee, a great character, and it's a little bit sad for me that you've chosen not to do one more year. Did that influence you at all? Did you think of that factor?
Well, firstly, thank you for your comments. That's very nice to get some positive feedback. Without a doubt, it did influence my decision. When at the World Cup, your wife and children are doorstepped for a whole week by journalists, knowing that you're not there, and I wonder why they're there. And three times this season, I've had photographers and reporters outside the house, and I wonder what's so fantastic about a photograph of Graham Poll wearing jeans and a T-shirt. But I guess you can't make it up for people. It's enough. As I say, there are a combination of reasons. It's an accumulation of the pressure that's built up over a number of years. And as I said, I could have made any number of points upon my retirement or changing jobs, I should point out, because I don't have enough money to retire, not by any stroke. But certainly the family, my protection of my family was a major part in my decision.
Do the kids get stick at school? after a particularly high profile match?
Because we live in a small town which is not particularly football biased. I have to say probably not by accident. No, the kids in the town know me as Graham. They know me as Gemma's dad or Josie's dad or Harry's dad. And I go to school. I do talks at school. I do what I can to help the school. So I think, yeah, certainly after the World Cup there were a couple of comments, but generally speaking they leave my kids alone, thankfully.
So what are you going to do to earn a crust going forward?
Well, it's important that it's interesting. People say about retiring. As I say, I'm changing jobs. 27 years in what has been a fantastic, fantastic job. And if you said to anyone nowadays, you're going to do this next job for 27 years, of which 26 are going to be highly, highly enjoyable, going to work places in the world you'd never heard of, let alone been to before, you'd take the job tomorrow. But enough's enough, and it is time for me to go. I know it's the right decision. I'm going to take a couple of months off over the summer. Clearly, there's a book to try and put across the perspective of a referee, of the journey through all the levels of football. It's not just about the Premier League, and football is not all about the Premier League, and hence why I make the points I make. And next season, some of what I'd like to do is continue on a quest to highlight the difficulties of referees, to try and put some balance in the reporting of football matches.
So a media career of some kind?
It's interesting, as soon as you raise that, people go, oh yeah, typically loves the limelight, you want to do media, but I have to do something. You know, it takes a professional referee 2 years to earn what a player earns in 1 week. Mm. So that tells you where we sit in the
ask you, how much do professional referees get paid, just for the sake of interest?
I think it's something which, if I asked you how much you got paid, you probably wouldn't tell me, but anyone that can do maths can work out, if it takes us 2 years to earn what a top player earns in 1 week, and the players are generally earning, the top players are on, I think it's 140 grand a week.
There was some figure last week of 200 grand a week.
Well, it'd be nice if referees could earn half that. But, so it's a question of, yes, there will be some element of what I do will be media driven, without question. And I'd like to utilise what I have to try and help my ex-colleagues, I have to say now, but still friends, who are in contact with me. I won't be able to work assessing and things like that to help them in that way. So if I can help them in some other way, that's what I'd like to do.
And do you worry that the kind of comments you've been making since you announced your retirement are going to put off people who might want to get into the game? Because we heard from the FA last week that whilst there isn't actually a shortage of referees, there's a very high turnover of referees. A lot of people coming in and then getting out of the game. Are you worried that you might put people off?
Yes, that is a concern, and it was something I considered before coming out with my exit piece, if you like. But it needs saying, because it needs improving. Because if we can still pick up 7,000 referees every year, if we can retain more of them by actually giving people the knowledge that you need to show respect to the referee who's stepping over the white line in very trying circumstances. He is doing his very, very best, or she is doing her very, very best. And I think we should embrace that a little bit more. And if I can play some small part in making that happen, then hopefully the one or two that think, well, if Graham Pohl can't take it, nor can I, what I'd ask them is, you're not subjected to what I've been subjected to, nor was any referee in modern day. The level of scrutiny I've had, the level of abuse I've had has been incredible, but it's not typical of every referee. So go out there, be a referee, it's a great life.
OK, Graham, and I'll just end with this text, which says, I saw Graham referee at QPR 2 seasons ago and he was a different class. The game will be worse off without a referee of his calibre. Graham, thanks very much for being with us on 5 Live.
A pleasure.
Really good to talk to you. Thanks for all your calls, texts and emails. Sorry if we didn't get round to yours, but I hope we covered the areas that you wanted to discuss. That was former football referee Graham Pohl taking your calls on the 5 Live phone-in programme. The 6:06 podcast will be back with Spoonie for England's game with Estonia on Wednesday night.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live. 5 Live.